Conventional wisdom has it that politicians have to check their ideals at the door and learn the art of compromise, but polls indicate that Americans still yearn for idealism in their leaders. So how can politicians balance realism and idealism? In this month's installment of our year-long film series, Political Projections, we look at Hollywood's answer to that question by examining three films: Frank Capra's Mr. Smith Goes to Washington and his State of the Union, and Rob Reiner's The American President. And joining me now to discuss them are Joseph McBride, Assistant Professor of Cinema at San Francisco State University and author of Frank Capra, The Catastrophe of Success. Also, Carrie Timchuk, the State Director for U.S. Senator Gordon Smith of Oregon, and formerly the Director of Speechwriting and Counsel to Bob Dole when he was the U.S. Senate Republican leader, and I'm very pleased to welcome them to the show. Carrie, it feels weird talking to a Republican named Carrie, but when you were writing political speeches, how did you strike a balance between idealism and pragmatism?
Well, it has to be done, and I think I've always said that successful politicians are a blend of both those, idealism and realism. And I suspect the same is true of successful political movies as well.
Well, despite the polls that show an increasing distrust of politicians, do you think Americans are still swayed by a bit of idealistic rhetoric?
Sure. I think that has been part of Senator Obama's appeal. Is he is incredibly eloquent and is speaking to the to the better angels of our nature and speaking to our idealism.
Well, when you were writing a political speech, was this something that you kept in mind? Boy, I better throw in a couple of high-minded ideas here just to get the folks excited.
I think you try for that. Senator Dole's image, though, was more closely to that of Senator McCain's. They were straight talk. Senator Dole was from the plains of Kansas and was a man of few words, and he said what he meant, and he meant what he said, and that was part of his image, and I think in who he was. So the idealism, you had to bring it down to good old fashioned Kansas language, and you couldn't get involved with too many $10 words.
Joseph, before we talk about the first movie, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, let's discuss Frank Capra for a moment. Why has he become synonymous with the political film in many people's minds?
Well, he was once told by Costa Gavras, who made Z, that he was the father of the political film because he made Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Even before that, he was making films that dealt directly with the Great Depression, American Madness, and Mr. Deeds Goes to Town. So he was the spokesman for the common man, so to speak, in the films of the 30s. That's why he was so successful and popular.
Well, he didn't write the scripts.
No, he Robert Riskin wrote most of his great films, although Mr. Smith was written by Sidney Buckman, who ironically was a member of the Communist Party when he wrote the film. It's one of the complexities of the film. And Capra was very nervous about the fact that he was working with a communist writer, and later informed on Sidney Buckman, which is one of the things that I write about in my book. The tragedy of Capra's life was that he worked with a lot of liberal and left-wing writers in the 30s, and then it became problematical for him to be associated with them after the war, and he disowned them and basically disowned his entire body of work.
Is the worldview presented in his movies his own or reflective of the general attitudes of the time when FDR was instituting his New Deal?
Well, I basically feel that he was giving Robert Riskin's point of view. Capra himself was a Republican and hated Franklin D. Roosevelt, although you wouldn't get that from his films. And I asked him why, and he said it was because Roosevelt was a rich kid. And he told me there was an issue of Life magazine that really upset him because it showed pictures of Roosevelt as a little boy in sort of Little Lord Fauntleroy costumes. And Capra had a class anger at him, but he was also particularly angry at the high tax rates of the New Deal period. And so he was in opposition to Roosevelt, but that wouldn't have sold at the box office, so he went with the flow. And Riskin was a liberal Democrat from New York. And as I say, Buckman was a communist. And so Capra, to give him his due, was able to accommodate differing points of view in his prime. Later, he found that was a liability, at least in his eyes, and so he deliberately wouldn't work with any liberal writers, and his films started becoming less incisive and less interesting over time.
It's interesting that Mrs. Smith has a very strong sense of patriotism. So whether it was written by a communist or not, it is a very American film. I don't know whether that's because of Capra or because of the script. Can you give us the briefest plot summary?
At the time, the Communist Party's slogan at the time was communism is 20th century Americanism. And they were very patriotic at the time because they saw the rise of fascism and they were supporting Roosevelt. And there's really no contradiction in the fact that Buckman was a patriotic American. But he was also very concerned with corruption and the destruction of American ideals in the political system.
Maybe, Kerry, you can give us a brief description of the plot.
Mr. Smith Goes to Washington? Sure,
yeah.
It's a classic, and it's a governor from a state that is not named, but I would guess the Midwest, is faced with the decision to appoint a new senator, as one has the ones just passed away. He is controlled by the machine, who is urging him to appoint a hack who would just go along to get along with what they order him to do, and the better citizenship committees of the state are urging him to appoint a reformer. And he flips a coin, and it lands on its side. And so he instead appoints someone who was kids. His sons first urged him to appoint, which was a fellow named Jefferson Smith, played by Jimmy Stewart, who's the head of the kind of a glorified version of the Boy Scouts called the Boy Rangers, and who has united the boys of his state into good citizenship and good deeds and camping and the joy of the outdoors and the environment.
And absolutely the wrong candidate for the political machine. And he winds
up
going
totally naive, totally, wide-eyed, but when he gets to Washington, D.C., a believer in all things good about democracy, and that good wins out, and he is faced with the realities of Washington, D.C., where, according to Mr. Capra, everybody has a motive, and everyone is trying to cut a deal, and the senior senator of this state, who knew Jefferson Smith's father, is widely regarded as a good man, but behind the scenes is trying to get a dam approved that would greatly inflate the value of land that he and the machine have invested in.
Now, I'm as somebody who has watched the Senate in action, the Senate proceedings appear to be fairly accurate, but I wonder, did all of this strike you as plausible?
Plausible. My old boss, Bob Dole, used to joke that watching the Senate at work is like watching paint dry, only duller. The Senate is not a very fun, or Congress in general, exciting place to watch to work. Most of the work is done in committee, behind the scenes, especially modern-day Senate. The Senate floor is not the scene of much action, and very few senators are on the floor during a debate, maybe a handful come to speak during the debate. And I noticed that in the movie, of course, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, all 100 senators are glued to their seats at all times, watching the debate, welcoming the new senator as he comes and speaking on the issues, and that's just not the case.
Now, Joseph, Jimmy Stewart's character is surrounded by, as Kerry said, some of the most venal, ineffectual, corrupt politicians we can imagine. Also, reporters. Were Americans deeply cynical at the time that Frank Delano Roosevelt was straight-talking them with his fireside chats?
No, I think the film was somewhat different from the standard public view. Capra was very skeptical about Washington journalists, and he said that was the main reason that people in Washington were upset about the film. A lot of members of Congress and members of the press were very angry about the film.
But the public liked it.
The public liked it a lot. It did very well, but and the critics liked it, but there was some talk about trying to stop the film, which luckily didn't happen. Actually, an interesting thing when you ask about the writers, the film was based on a Pulitzer Prize-winning play by Maxwell Anderson called Both Your Houses, which is pretty well forgotten today because it opened the day after Roosevelt installed the bank holiday, and almost nobody went to see it in 1933. And the script was plagiarized from that. It was not by Buckman, but by another writer who was working on the film before that. And Columbia discovered this 3 weeks before the film opened and bought the rights to the play. But if you read the play, it's almost the same plot. the only difference in the play, the big difference, is that the congressman loses his battle, and the Capra film is a contrived happy ending.
Yeah, well, perhaps losing his battle would have been more realistic. We have a clip from the movie where Senator Smith is on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, having been smeared by the political machine and the senator from his state. He's joined by his secretary, Saunders, who is played by his co-star, Jimmy Stewart's co-star, Gene Arthur.
Now, look, Senator.
I don't know. This is a whole new world to me. What are you going to believe in? When a man like Payne, Senator Joseph Payne, gets up and swears that I've been robbing kids of nickels and dimes. A man I've admired and worshipped all my life. I don't know. A lot of fancy words around this town. Some of them are carved in stone. Some of them, I guess the tailors and Paynes put them up there so suckers like me could read them. And then when you find out what men actually do, well, I'm getting out of this town so fast and away from all the words and the monuments and the whole rotten show.
I see. When you get home, what are you going to tell those kids?
Well, I'll tell them the truth. Might as well find it out now as later.
I don't think they'll believe you, Jeff. You know, they're liable to look up at you with hurt faces and say, Jeff, what did you do? Quit? Didn't you do something about it?
We've just heard a clip from Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. I'm talking on today's Political Projections with Joseph McBride, who's the author of Frank Capra, The Catastrophe of Success, published by St. Martin's, and Kerry Timchuk, who's the state director for U.S. Senator Gordon Smith of Oregon. We're talking about the way Hollywood has dealt with idealism. And all three of the films that we are talking about, Mrs. Smith Goes to Washington, also State of the Union, and The American President, have a moment where the politician is urged, the hero is urged to speak out, although he refuses to. Kerry, since that's something that we've heard from another Kerry, is there an inclination to just let things lie?
As opposed to, you know, going a Bullworth moment, to quote another movie.
Yes.
Sure, I think there's always a folks in politics who are urging those in office to not touch the third rail, you know, to not talk about controversial issues, to not say what sometimes needs to be said because it will insult some folks or will make other parts of the voting population mad. What I noticed in the movies and a lot of political movies that the same thing is that they are painted in colors of black and white. The heroes are very, very heroic. The villains are very, very bad, and the issues are crystal cut and very clear that you should be on one side or the other. And why that makes for good movies, it's not what happens in politics. I mean, the fact about politics and issues and legislation is everything's in shades of gray. The heroes aren't as clear, the villains aren't as clear, the issues aren't as clear. There's room to maneuver in the middle to try to find something that pleases most of the people, but very rarely do you get a bill or a result that obviously pleases 100% of the people.
Joseph, what similarities do you see between Mr. Smith and then Frank Capra's later film, State of the Union?
Well, it's interesting. When you played the clip, it showed the darkness and disillusion that the character goes through. And even though, in a sense, it's black and white in that Jimmy Stewart is a good person and the people he's arrayed against are corrupt, there are a lot more gray shades in that film than people realize and in Capra's work in general. Capra was sort of manic depressive artist. He had great mood swings in his films, which is one of the reasons they seem very lifelike, and
because they can be very funny and then they get very serious.
Yeah, very tragic. Three of his films end with people killing themselves, if you count It's a Wonderful Life, which is really a film about suicide, and Mr. Smith ends with the character fainting on the floor of the Senate, and so he's basically almost dead symbolically, and he's revived only through a miracle, which is kind of hard to swallow when the corrupt senator tries to kill himself. So the Capra films are very dark, and Capra actually wrote most of the scene you just played about the rotten show and the junk about American ideals. And even though he was the most patriotic of filmmakers, He had great disillusion about America, especially after the war when the Red Scare came in and he was gray-listed and basically quit movies.
That must have hurt a Republican to be gray-listed.
Yeah, well, he felt it was unfair because he blamed the writers. The writers made me do it was basically his defense, but he was the director and he took the credit for it.
And he had all those successful films and his name was above the title.
Yeah.
Can you give us a plot summary of State of the Union?
Well, State of the Union is based on another Pulitzer Prize winning play by Howard Lindsay and Russell Crouse, and it's about a presidential candidate who's a Wendell Willkie-like figure, Republican airplane manufacturer who's an amateur politician who runs for the White House, and he's estranged from his wife, and in the film it's played by Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn, and he has a mistress who's a right-wing newspaper publisher played by Angela Lansbury, who's great in the film.
She's the villain. That was her preparation for Manchurian Candidate.
Yeah, right. And she was only 22 when she did State of the Union. It's remarkable. So the candidate has to get back together with his wife as a sham to fool the voters into thinking he's happily married. So it's quite a cynical story, and it was based on Wilkie's wife was estranged from him, and they got back together for the 1940 campaign, according to Franklin D. Roosevelt. And so that's what the story is based on.
And there's one scene where an Italian barber tells Grant Matthews, the Spencer Tracy character, that the reason government is screwed up is because there are no women in it. In Mr. Smith, Senator Smith is only successful mm-hmm. because of the efforts of his female secretary. And that was 60 years ago. It's only now that a woman is making a serious run for the White House.
Well, Capra was a real feminist back in his heyday, and then he sort of changed as the country changed. But women in his films always have jobs, and they're very strong. And when you look at Mr. Smith, it's remarkable that you wonder why Jean Arthur is not the senator instead of this ignorant guy that she works for, because she's the one who tells him everything about what he's supposed to do and explains everything about Washington to him. And she has a lot more dialogue in the film than Jimmy Stewart does.
Well, as Carrie probably understands, the advisors and the speechwriters always know more than the candidates.
You said that. I didn't.
Well, they do put the words into their mouth in many cases. We have a little clip from the film. Before he's forced to compromise to his political backers, Grant Matthews is convinced by Katharine Hepburn, playing his wife, to say what's really on his mind. Another one of those scenes. Let's hear a little bit of it.
I'm going to tell him that the wealthiest nation in the world is a failure, unless it's also the healthiest nation in the world. That means the highest medical care for the lowest income groups, and that goes for housing, too. The one thing this nation is not rich enough to afford is not having a roof over our heads. And I'm going to tell them that the American dream is not making money. This is the well-being and the freedom of the individual throughout the world, from Patagonia to Detroit. We can't be an island of plenty in a world of starvation, you know. We have to send food, clothing, machinery, and money for the bitter, impoverished people of the world to try to recreate their self-respect. Give them the desire again for individual freedom.
And like Wendell Willkie, he also has, as part of that speech, a one-world ideal. Would it be possible for a politician to say something like that, Kerry?
It would be, but boy, hey, that healthcare piece, that sounds like as relevant as this week in the presidential debate that's going on. But yeah, foreign policy remains a tough issue to talk about. You know, if you were to ask the average American how much money, you know, Congress and America spends on foreign aid, they would greatly inflate it. We actually spend a very tiny portion of the budget. But folks assume that we spend much more than we do, and for a great many people, it remains controversial. But I think both Senator McCain, the Republican nominee, and I think either Senator Clinton or Senator Obama will have very similar views on foreign aid. They are internationalists, all three of them. So I don't think that will be much up for debate for this election.
Let's go to the third film, The American President, which was released in 1995, directed by Rob Reiner and written by Aaron Sorkin, who later created The West Wing on TV. And this looks like kind of like a pilot for The West Wing. In one scene, Annette Bening, who plays a lobbyist who is soon to be the president's love interest, arrives at the White House and remarks that she wants to take in its Capra-esque quality. a kind of a clue that Rob Reiner or whoever was putting this together was thinking about Frank Capra. Do you see it that way, Joseph?
Frank Capra III, the director's grandson, is the assistant director on the film. Yeah, Reiner is one of those Hollywood filmmakers who's a big Capra fan, and the film is a good script by Aaron Sorkin, who really knows his way around political films, and it has the ups and downs that we've been talking about with idealism and disillusionment and the president being very frustrated by aspects of his job. To me, there's the most remarkable scene is the one in which he's supposed to have a date with Annette Bening, and he has to cancel it because he has to bomb the Libyan intelligence headquarters, and he has a meeting with his staff about how many people we're going to kill if we bomb at a certain time or a different time, and he's told that, you know, a certain number of janitors will be killed, and he's very, very upset, and he says this is the least presidential thing I do. And that, to me, puts a shadow over the whole film. It's supposed to be a romantic comedy, but it's a rather dark film in some ways.
Carrie, do you think it resonated well with conservative Republican audiences?
Well, I think the difference between the American President and the Capra films, you couldn't really tell who was a Republican and who was a Democrat. In American President, it's really clear that Michael Douglas is the Democrat, and that Richard Dreyfuss' character, Bob Rumson, not only is a Republican, but he's Bob Dole. The movie was made in 1995, you know, right before Dole was beginning to run for president. Dreyfuss' character is named Bob, is the Senate Republican leader, just as Senator Dole was. And it's very clear, you know, which side Sorkin comes down on. I remember some grumblings among the Republicans and conservatives that, you know, it was a very entertaining movie, but it was a movie that that was not kind to the Republican brand.
But in this movie, unlike the uncompromising Senator Smith or Grant Matthews, the president is often willing to compromise. As he puts it, we fight the fights we can win. Do you think that's because this movie came out 50 years after the previous one?
Well, I think it was very Clintonian as well. You know, President Clinton, his policy was triangulation, as it was called, where he did it. He achieved the victories he could get. He was dealing with a Republican Congress, and I think he took what he could get. And a more realistic view of leadership, I think, than the Capra view of the 1930s, where it was, you know, all or nothing, and one side was always right and the other side was always wrong.
Now, in his case, he refuses to respond to attacks on him and his relationship with this lobbyist played by Annette Bening. But here's a clip from the movie where the president is confronted by one of his aides, played by Michael J. Fox, for not responding.
And I want to know what it says to you that in the past 7 weeks, 59% of Americans have begun to question your patriotism.
Look, if people want to listen to
patriotism, they don't have a choice! Bob Rumson is the only one doing the talking. People want leadership, Mr. President, and in the absence of genuine leadership, they'll listen to anyone who steps up to the microphone. They want leadership. They're so thirsty for it, they'll crawl through the desert toward a mirage, and when they discover there's no water, they'll drink the sand.
Lewis, we have had presidents who were beloved, who couldn't find a coherent sentence with two hands and a flashlight. People don't drink the sand because they're thirsty. They drink the sand because they don't know the difference.
And in the end, the president finally responds to Bob Rumson and says that the office of president is all about character and that he will wage a character debate if necessary. And I think to some degree, Americans really do feel that the presidency is all about character.
Well, I think that's what political films revolve around usually is personalities and character dramas. And I think also the character played by Dreyfuss is somewhat like Newt Gingrich. But the basic drama still holds whether the issues of the day are changed. However, one thing that's good about the Sorkin film is that it deals with a couple of real issues, global warming and gun control, so that he doesn't dodge complicated issues, and the film does not portray them as simple issues. One thing, in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, Jimmy Stewart and Claude Rains are Democrats because of where they sit in the Senate. It's not mentioned they don't use the words Democrat or Republican, I guess.
You got to know those things. But we've run out of time, unfortunately. Our next installment of Political Projections will be on May 6th, a Tuesday. We'll be looking at political remakes with the original and remade versions of all the King's Men and the Manchurian Candidate, so you might want to start watching them now. My great thanks to our two participants in today's show, Joseph McBride, Frank Capra's biographer, and Kerry Timchuk, who was Bob Dole's speechwriter.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
On tomorrow's show, Aaron David Miller, who's been working to broker an Arab-Israeli peace agreement for almost 20 years, tells us whether he thinks a solution will ever be possible. Also, we'll hear about teaching American modern dance in Shanghai, then an innovative exchange program between U.S. and Asian education leaders, plus a neuroscientist and a Tibetan Buddhist monk look into the origins of fear and how we can best deal with our fears. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blake Mieschick, Sarah English, and Scott Goldberg. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from Paula Crossfield, Stephanie Hughes, Stephen Valentino, and Dina Mann. Special thanks to Marty Goldenson. Jason Isaacs was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening. We will see you tomorrow.